Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 205, a small, rather cute Pininfarina styled Peugeot on Tuesday, the 18th of September, 2018. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And on this technically challenged week, we'll be looking at why the Circle of Five is in the European Commission's headlights. We'll also be stepping back to the 70s. And we are going to sit in awe at the lengths one team went to appear at the WRC Turkey.
Yeah, apologies, normal video viewer people who like that and patrons and stuff. Yes, the hotel Wi-Fi was having none of it, not even on audio. So Andrew and I are speaking to each other via the wonders of the telephone.
Yes, very retro.
And recording locally, so this is old school.
Right, so before Alan gets disconnected through lack of data or something, let's crack on with the follow-up, because there is a bit. And we start with our favourite, which is Dieselgate. And as you know, Volkswagen are in court, being taken to court by a group of investors. And last week, the former group CEO, Martin Winterkorn, sorry, even if I could speak.
One of those nights, everyone.
Yes, I haven't put my teeth in properly. The judge said that he was slow to, and I'm quoting here from Automotive News article, which will be in show notes, which I lovingly curate every week, slow to address the automaker's emissions test cheating that led to huge US fines. So the judge has said that. So that's quite a blow to VW's case, I would suggest. But this all hinges on, when did the Volkswagen executives know about this? And if they knew about it after at a particular time, why didn't they tell investors or do something more to sort it? So with the judge saying that the CEO dragged his feet, that's not great. That is not great at all. But there we go. That will keep running and running until we're expecting the final decision in the new year.
Until the end of time. Yes. Hopefully we won't have something to talk about it every week, because otherwise some of us might slit our wrists. Anyway, moving on. We talked a couple of times in the last few months about JD Classics. A couple of reasons. First is that the former Lotus CEO, Jean-Marc, I think it's Gilles.
Yeah, I think so.
Was now essentially leading JD Classics. That's where he went after the Geely, essentially the Geely buyout of Lotus from and a chunk of Proton. However, what's now happened is that JD Classics has gone into administration. The reason they were in trouble originally is that Derek Hood, who founded JD Classics, had been accused of deliberate and dishonest conduct, pretending that there were multiple buyers for cars to push prices up and basically having people bidding against nobody, and a number of things like that around ways of basically selling, trying to sell cars for more. A judge agreed with that particular lawsuits, and now, of course, and as a result, the fines that have come from that and the compensation that they're being forced to pay out has basically been too much for them financially. The company themselves have at the minute a couple of different divisions and parts. There's a base near Malden. Mm-hmm. They've got a showroom in Mayfair, one on the west coast of the US as well, I believe, and a racing division too. It's got about 60 staff. And administrators have been appointed, and they're looking for somebody to buy the business.
There's confidence that this can be bought relatively quickly and at a price that the administrators are hoping for, reading between the lines of this Autocar article.
Exactly, because it wasn't really a problem with the problem wasn't that the company didn't have enough turnover, didn't have any, was a bad company financially in any of those points.
Yeah, the concept is not bad. Just there was some bad practices which have now been eradicated because those people, that person, I think they say those people in the wording here. But there's a new team on board that are driving it forward. So I can't think I can bring any more cliches into that there.
Driving it forward.
Sorry, everyone. to apologize. Yeah. I will.
With the synergy that can be, Yes. Anyway, so that's happening in the background. If there's any changes, we should let you know.
Yeah, well, I hope it's all sorted because it's, as ever with these things, it's never the workers on the floor that are at fault here, but they're the ones who bear a big brunt of the worry and the pain of these things. So hopefully it can be fixed for all them.
Exactly.
Right, just a quick one here. Last week talked about the problems with the keyless entry system that was used on the likes of Teslas and McLarens and how that could potentially be exploited by naughty people. Well, there's a video which I've linked to on the show notes that shows exactly how you can steal a Tesla very, very easily, actually.
Watching, I don't know what you're laughing
watching
at.
The video. Well, it's either that or cry, because, you know, nobody needs to see that, but how incredibly simple it is if you happen to have the right equipment. And this is the sort of £50 off eBay type equipment as well. It's not.
But by right equipment, Andrew means a Raspberry Pi and the appropriate type of transceiver is really all you need.
Yes.
Plus some skills. But it's remarkably quick. And the video has dramatic music and everything.
Yes. So
it rises to a crescendo of driving away. It's quite, yeah. And it's got overlaid text like The Matrix and all sorts of stuff.
It's good, but it shows how frighteningly simple it can be with keyless entry to gain unlawful entry.
It does. Worth the minute of your time, to be honest. Minute and 5 seconds. Yeah.
Yep.
I said something last week which turned out to be wrong.
Dun, dun, dun.
These things happen. I said that vehicles built before the 1st of September this year could still be registered after that if they were built, you know, before then, but weren't WLTP compliant or tested. I was slightly wrong. Andy Masson, who is the PACE product manager for electrification and WLTP at Jaguar, so he is. I'd say he's done a little reading on this. I think he'd say he's sick to his back teeth of this. But he quickly stepped in with a tweet when he'd listened and clarified it. So I'm going to read out Andy's tweet verbatim and not try and be smart about stuff. So he said that pre-WLTP vehicles built before the 1st of June could be derogated, in inverted commas, to allow registration up until the 31st of August 2019. So if something's been sitting on your forecourt for ages, or since before 1st of June, then it can still be sold up until 31st of August next year.
Mm-hmm.
Next bit. Pre-WLTP vehicles built between the 1st of June and the 31st of August 2018 must be registered by the 1st of September 2018. So if you built your car after the 1st of June, in June, July or August, they had to be registered by the 1st of September. And that's one of the things which has driven that spike.
Surge.
In registrations. Surge.
Yes.
Vehicles built from the 1st of September must be certified to WLTP. That's it.
Yep.
Okay. So yes. There you go. So there's three phases, not just two, like I thought. So yes, those. I retweeted the tweet just after Andy made it. So hopefully you caught it anyway by, you know, following at Motoring Podcast on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Last bit of follow-up then. iOS 12 is now out, so that means that you can get Waze and Google Maps on your Apple CarPlay. So for everybody who doesn't like the OEM's own inbuilt sat-nav,
Or Apple Maps,
then you now have options. Have at it.
Just a quickie.
Mm.
In Johnny the Yaris, the sort of plug into the third party. I was going to say cheapo, but it wasn't. It was still quite expensive. Thing that lets me play my phone through the 17-year-old stereo.
Yes.
It doesn't quite have enough oomph to keep my phone, to charge my phone at the same time as using a map app, GPS.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you've got to be slightly careful. And Apple Maps is way a bajillionty times better than it was when it was new, because it was absolutely appalling. Also,
I think I'm sure I read somewhere that they ripped it up and started again with that because they knew it, because they got feedback, in inverted commas, on quite how unfriendly it was for customers.
Yeah, just what was missing. So anyway, it's pretty decent now anyway, and it's quite good at taking you around traffic, but it uses significantly less power than Waze does. I love Waze.
Oh, okay. That's interesting to know.
Waze is better, but it is really thirsty. So if you don't have a way to plug your phone in, if you're in a car, you've forgotten the cable or something, Waze is wonderful, but it's awfully, awfully battery intensive. So do try and use one of the other apps. I don't tend to use Google Maps much, but I do use Apple Maps, and it's 1,000 times better than it used to be.
I've used Google Maps.
And
it's
not bad.
Not bad.
It also uses way less battery power. That was my real point.
That's an important one to remember. Okay, that's good. Mm. Good bit of knowledge. I didn't know that. Right, that's there the end of the follow-up, and we're now on to the new news, Alan.
News, which is going to sound an awful lot like follow-up, really, because the it involves German car manufacturers being investigated, in this case by the European Union, to look
at... Commission. It's the European Commission.
Yes, pardon me. It's the European Commission that is doing the investigation.
Yes. Oh, the amount of times I got that wrong. reading this myself.
Yeah, sorry. It starts with one and then the other. The article in Autocar is correct. So the European Commission is investigating whether BMW, Daimler and Volkswagen agreed not to compete against each other on the development and rollout of important systems to reduce harmful emissions from petrol and diesel passenger cars. That's a direct quotation from Margaret Vestager, the commissioner in charge of competition policy.
Now, the commission has been gunning for VW on the other the other issue, which will go nameless for the minute because we're not in follow-up.
Yeah, get on with it.
But I can't remember who the lady was who was involved in that.
That was someone different.
I know it's somebody different because this is a different branch of it, but the commission has got their sights set on car manufacturers, clearly.
Well, they do. It's been escalated to such a... To be honest, it's easy hunting now.
Well, to be fair, in this instance, if it proves, because this is following raids, wasn't it, last year?
Yes, there were raids.
That we must have mentioned, but it's following the raids, or inspections, as they've been written in this Autocar article, last year. Now, if it turns out that this is true, then, you know, the manufacturers deserve everything that's thrown at them. Because we've been shortchanged as consumers, forgetting, and that's not even talking about, well, you've denied competition to make things cleaner quicker, and then there's health issues from that.
There is other stuff which they're said to have colluded about as well, including common quality requirements, testing procedures. And then the ones that really matter, you know, maximum speed at which cruise control and convertible car roofs can be used. Yeah, I'm not sure that those really will be a major factor of it.
No.
But yeah, they're trying to make sure that they haven't colluded. The trouble is that people, of course, transfer between these companies all the time. And it's deciding whether it is actually collusion or they're acting the same kind of way because people are... Because, you know, information is traveling with, you know, in people's heads.
Yeah, it's a difference between it's the difference between collusion and, which I presume they're going to have to establish, the difference between collusion to deny the consumers something and agreeing on a set of standards which will make it easier for them to provide vehicles at a reasonable price or a price that people are expecting.
Yes, exactly.
And that's going to... So there's going to be a lot of... Technical lawyers must be rubbing their hands with glee now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, yes, we'll see where that one goes anyway.
Yes.
Hopefully it doesn't turn into another Dieselgate.
Oh, God, no. Please, no. Well, I think we've learned our lesson on Dieselgate. We may touch on it occasionally. Right, moving on to new news. And this is bad news. actually, that Jaguar Castle Bromwich, the plant there, will be moving to 3-day weeks until Christmas. The firm has described it as a temporary move, but this is being put down to... Well, I'm going to read out what Jaguar said, because they've said in the Motoring Research article here, in light of the continuing headlines impacting the car industry, we are making some temporary adjustments to our production schedules at Castle Bromwich.
There's a couple of things in there as well, by the way. So it's not just there's the rapid shift away from diesel in there.
Yep.
There's the B word. There has been mentioned here as well. Now, I find that one a little bit trickier to believe that it's actually involved in this too much. There is all, you know, where there is uncertainty and everything else, but I don't know that it's quite as much.
Well, it depends on if you are following the idea that the production in this country is dropping off for cars provided to this country, not so much exports, then that's possible. Well, that's possibly, but I, because you know, I'm not trying to make this tie up either. That's why I didn't want to mention the tweet, but, really.
But the last one, I'm not mentioning the tweet because I don't really agree with the tweet either. The last one in there is that the paces, you know, the F pace and the E pace have for the first time ever made up the majority of Jaguar sales.
Yep.
And they're not made at the Castle Bromwich product. The flip side of that is, of course, demand for the XE is dropping off, demand for the XF is dropping off, demand for the XJ is dropping off, and the F-Type is not really a...
It's not a volume seller, production. Is it? So.
It's not a volume seller, and it is at a point where it may be, you know, is probably ready for refresh or something.
Yeah.
So, and those cars are all made at Castle Brom. So there's a general drop-off of the Castle Bromwich-built vehicles...
Mm.
With the diesel overlay, with the diesel stuff, and yeah, maybe people aren't buying as many cars, but it's whether that's related to the B word is a different matter.
Yeah, yeah. So it's unfortunate, but I mean they've found a way to keep it open. They're not shutting it. They're trying to keep it open. No, they are just slowing down things, which has got to be better than saying right, sorry, we're shutting.
Yeah, it's a grown-up, sustainable way of dealing with this, and it depends what they do. If they, it just depends how they handle it and what they're doing with new models coming through as well.
Yeah.
I guess all eyes are on I-Pace, which of course is made in Austria by Steyr. So yes, but we'll see what happens there. Hopefully that gets sorted out before very long, but it could well be to do with planning. If it's 3 days. Consistency, then that's just great. But you know,
yep.
As a plant, it'll be over capacity at the minute.
Yep.
Next up, Lucid Motors. Now we've mentioned Lucid Motors before, and it was quite a while ago.
A long time ago.
Long time ago.
And I'm convinced it was almost scathing when we did as well.
I think that was Faraday Future that we were.
Oh, that's Faraday.
About.
Sorry. Yes, they were the ones who put a shovel in the ground and said, "Give us all this money for a plant, please," didn't they?
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, and lots of other bits and pieces. Lucid are the ones that haven't done any of that. Lucid are the ones who came along and said, look, we want to build this car called the Lucid Air. This was a couple of years ago, really.
Yeah.
And they said, look, we want to do this and we want to, we need to build a factory, but we want to make sure we've got the product right first. It was a rather different approach to, you know, some other startups.
Radical. Hashtag disruption.
To actually, yes, to rather than, you know, testing stuff out for the consumer. So this is what they've been doing, is they've been very quiet about it whilst they've engineered the little socks off it. Yeah, their chief technology officer is ex-Jaguar, Lotus and Tesla. They've got former vice presidents of Tesla from the early days and engineers from there. So people with quite a lot of background of actually doing stuff and actually building things and taking stuff from near nothing up to actually having a certain level of production in there. So they've wanted to make sure the product was right. And this won £760 million or $1 billion from the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund is to help them finish off the development stuff and start a factory.
Yep.
At Casa Grande in Arizona. And that's what they're doing. And they're making sure they've got everything sorted out, the full system done, so that when they start, they're starting and they're building something that is buildable in a location that is suitable at a reasonable price. It's supposed to throw up to 1,000 brake horsepower, 0-60 time of 2.5 seconds, 400-mile range, all these wonderful big numbers. And so somewhere between $60,000 and $100,000 US, or £47,000 to £78,000. I think, you know what it's like. It's the numbers, it's electric vehicles, and it might be able to do all of that, but it won't be able to do 1,000 brake horsepower for 400 miles.
there's
a balance. You can do one or the other, but you can't do them all at the same time.
No.
So let's see what's happening there. But the reason we're mentioning them is $1 billion from the Saudis, and the fact that they've taken this very different approach to Faraday, to Tesla these days, Tesla in the early days, less so. Everyone says they're one to watch. They seem to have quite a lot of respect.
Mm. Yeah, they do.
Unlike
the car
us, and then
looks they're massively wide.
It's America.
Mm.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? And that's always the worry when they come over here. I mean,
but it'd be interesting if we can get another, you know, another electric vehicle brand that can do it properly, and can, you know, properly compete with the more traditional OEMs, then that can only be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Including the new Audi Turd, of course, which was e-tron, which was announced very early this morning in a time zone which is only suitable for the far east and the west coast of America. So guess where their target markets are.
Mm.
So yes, I mean that very much is that. Yes,
yeah, right.
That's the one that's being discussed right at the moment, everyone.
Yes, quite. Right, moving on then. VW.
Are we going to talk about Volkswagen colluding?
Yes.
Oh, no, not colluding, sorry. Looking for potential partners in an industry-wide alliance.
That's correct, yes. It's all in the wording, Alan. It's all how you frame it.
That's not colluding.
Your Honour.
Yes.
But what it is, there was a Auto News Europe article talking about how Volkswagen has entered into discussion with up to 15 potential partners about creating this industry-wide alliance to do with autonomous, self-driving, automated, whichever, if you mould them all together, but self-driving technology, all these terms.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the idea that they've got behind this is that Well, it's all to reduce the potential legal issues for them. Is the driving force for this. Now, how they are suggesting that could happen is that if there is an issue with your car and you go to court, if you can say that you are following the latest technical standard, the court is more likely to err on your side than, say, perhaps the person who has been impacted by this accident.
Literally or otherwise.
Yes, quite. Yes. So they want to get together and say, right, these are standards for what we think is safe self-driving tech. I understand from a business point of view why they want to do this. However, anyone who's listened to me or followed me on Twitter for any length of time of over, say, 30 seconds will know that would sort of worry me. And the main thing that worries me is the software they're using right now,
mm-hmm.
and how that is being proclaimed as it's going to fix all the problems. And if you want a technical standard, you surely want to start with a standard that adheres to safety critical software processes. I'd have thought.
And this would start to share the cost of developing what that standard's going to be and things. So, you know, from that point of view, in fact, this kind of let's have a body where we can come up with these and we can develop these standards is a good starting point.
Oh yeah, it makes, like I say, there are certain bits of it that completely make sense from a business point of view and an industry point of view to move things along. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, Volkswagen is behind on this.
Yeah, well,
there is that as well. Let's not forget that the German premium or OEMs, they are behind on this, like they were behind on the electric vehicles as well.
As far as I'm aware, that on this, Mercedes is the furthest ahead, in the same way that BMW was furthest ahead with EVs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we'll see what happens. I think that's all we can say with
yes. that. But it worries me slightly too, as you can imagine.
No.
As you can imagine.
Yeah, I noticed you put yourself against that particular one, mm-hmm. which meant that I got the Welsh story.
Well, yeah, I nearly did two on the trot here.
I actually had to look up whether or not the Daily Post was a genuine site, or whether it was like the Daily Mash or one of these ones, because it seemed like such a ridiculous name.
Oh my God. I'm sorry to everybody who lives in North Wales for my colleagues' lack of education.
Yeah. Well, I had to look up where the A55 was.
Come on.
Well, I don't know. Why do I go to Wales? I never go to that part.
Why don't you go to Wales is more the point.
I live on the opposite side of the country, mate. So anyhow, I did have to make sure that this wasn't a spoof. But it seems that there are plans being considered by the Welsh government to ban... I mean, it says tractors could face A55 ban at the top of the page here, but it could be to ban tractors and other slow-moving vehicles mm-hmm. from the A55 at peak hours under these plans. The idea is to basically help avoid congestion in the first place by letting the traffic flow more smoothly and... At a greater pace. Good luck trying to get this to happen in the first place with tractors, and B, trying to then actually police it somehow.
Well, yeah, because there's only a couple of spots on the A55 where peak time there is a real issue with traffic, and one of them is in Broughton. As you come from either the Wirral or you come from Manchester, depending on which motorway is meeting up, and you go into there and it goes down from five lanes, I think it is, down into two. And funnily enough, there's a bit of a snare up there.
I can't imagine how that could
And happen. That section is already limited to 50 mile an hour anyway, mm-hmm. Which you never get to because of the traffic. And that's quite a busy area for jobs and things like that. Other than that, there aren't many areas that have proper tailbacks or anything like that due to traffic. It is weak at best. You know, we're not talking the M62 in rush hour or the M25. But one of the major problems with the A55 is that the people who are, you know, the people not in tractors who see a slower vehicle, about 3 miles ahead, and sit in the outside lane at 52 miles an hour.
Well, that's the other one. That's like me and my thing about lorry overtaking during peak times. Mm. That would stop it, like they do in Germany.
Yeah.
But there is a point here that there are many quotations from Ken Skates, the economy secretary, whatever the heck that means. And he points out that in all likelihood it would be timed ban, but it needs to be done in, you know, consultation with shareholders, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So at peak hours and that kind of thing. So it's not nearly as scary or as big a deal as the as it's being made out in the headline.
No, it's a nice clickbaity headline, but tractors causing the issue and slow vehicles, that's minimum. It's everybody else.
Anyhow, brings us to that point in the show where it is the well-known, the famous, the wonderful guilt minute. It's that moment when I take a short period out from the week's news stories to remind you about a couple of ways that you can support the podcast. Obviously, first of all, you can listen and subscribe and like and leave a rating via the podcast playing platform of your choice. That makes a humongous difference to us because it pushes us into more obvious places on your podcast players, a list of potential podcasts in there. And that does good by moving us up there. Next is, of course, you could buy some of our sweet merch. Our sweet merch is currently confined to a pair of sweet stickers, some of which are from the inside, and some of them go on the inside of a window and shine out, and others are conventional stickers that stick to whatever you wish, to your toolbox, to your garage door, to your car if you have heavily tinted windows like both of mine do, that kind of places there, and they're available from motoringpodcast.com if you click on the shop button at the top of the page, and they're £2.50 each, so including postage, packing, etc.
bargain, a bargain,
total,
and they don't
bargain.
Taste the sweets, by the way.
And they don't taste it. I'm sorry about that.
Too many sweets.
Don't lick or eat them. Last but not least, of course, then we have our Patreon. Patreon is a wonderful way that you can give us a small amount of your hard-earned cash every month on a sort of subscription basis. And you decide how much, and you're at different levels. There's different stuff there. So do take a look at that. If you go to motoringpodcast.com, there is a big orange Patreon button on the right-hand side. Or you can go to patreon.com/motoringpodcast and find out more about that. And of course, last but not least, you can tell a mate and try and persuade through the power of friendly persuasion that really the Motoring Podcast is something that they would enjoy and should be listening to. And that, I think, just about does me for the guilt minute this week. I've done it all in the opposite door order just for fun.
Yeah, let's see if anyone notices.
Mm.
Right, come on, Formula E.
So Formula E, our little occasional delve into motorsport here. A couple of things. First of all, Nissan, the EDAMS team, which used to be Renault EDAMS.
Yes.
Before that was Prost. As well, then given that Nissan is now the EV brand within the Rebel Alliance, then now it is Nissan that's taking it over and taking over that stake in EDAMS from Renault from the next. Well, it's December, isn't
it?
Whenever we see season 5 there. The also supporting season 5 at that first race will be the Jaguar I-Pace E-Trophy Racing Series, about as close to electric touring car racing as I think we're going to get. And it'll start there. It's a support race to Formula E. So Formula E, I don't know, it's had support races before.
Not that I'm aware of.
No. So this is going to be interesting.
We've seen this.
An interesting development.
We've seen one of these up close, haven't we? It looks great.
Yeah, we saw it in January at Autosport International. And it's a great-looking vehicle. It's like an I-Pace is good-looking, but you slam it, add some carbon fibre. And some hexagonal cooling holes, and it looks even better. So it's going to be interesting because that's, you know, normal size and shape vehicles racing.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. That really will be. I can't wait. Actually,
I think there could be some damage sustained to vehicles.
The
very first race.
Yeah, I think so. Right, moving on to World Rally Turkey.
Now, I'd just like to point out to people that there is a small break in our contractual obligations with this coverage of WRC Turkey today.
Yes, only because I talk about the rally. But a company dear to Alan's heart managed to win Rally Turkey, so Toyota... with Ott Tanak winning, I think that's three races on the bounce now. Germany, I want to say France. I can't remember off the top of my head. Sorry, everybody. It's very poor. I should know. And now, yes, now Turkey. But in what I think that has to be the most attritional round this year, where people were being knocked out the race left, right and centre. Tanik had no problems for the entire weekend, kept it smooth and steady, and ended up winning with his colleague Latvala in second, and Padden bringing Hyundai in third. So on the Friday, we lost, because, like I said, there was a lot of people knocked out. But on the Friday, we lost, who was it?
Mats Osberg and Elfyn Evans both had broken suspension on the Friday.
Yeah, on the Friday. On the Saturday, we had Nouveau's suspension just shot up through the top of his wing. And there's I was watching the highlights tonight on Channel 5, and they had the camera there on the outside of the car watching it as it happened. And then you just watched it disintegrate.
But not in quite the same way as Osberg's Citroen, of Craig Breen's Citroen disintegrated.
Well, yeah, Craig Breen, I felt so sorry for him. I really did. He got a slow puncture on the Friday and he was so upset because he'd done so well up to then. I mean, he was after stage two, he was leading and he was so upset. He was almost in tears being interviewed in the car. Poor guy, that he just lost so much time because, you know, the rallying gods had decided they'd throw a stone at his tyre. And to be fair, they were more rocks than stones in Turkey. This really was properly rough.
It's pretty rough, yeah.
It was really bad. And then Ogier, he also had suspension problem, but he managed to fix his enough to limp back to the service area. So he carried on. But then later on that day, he misheard his co-driver and he braked too late to a turn and just slid off and couldn't get off. So then he was out, although he came back the next day and managed to end up in 10th and get 1 point. But Nouveau came back obviously on Sunday as well, because they fixed it, and he got power stage points, so he got extra points. What else? There was
Esa-Pekka Lappi's Toyota, so the third Yaris, had to retire.
Yes.
On the Saturday because of crash.
That's right. And I think it was Mikkelsen in the Hyundai. He was leading until he had an issue, and then that gifted it to Ott Tanak. But what it's meant in the driver standings, with three races to go now, Rally GB is the next one, means Nouveau is in first on 177 points. Tanak is now in second on 164, and Ogier is third on 154. Lappi's 88 on 88 points, way behind, so he's got no chance. So now we're in a three-way tussle with three races to go. So it's GB, Catalonia, and Australia. Wow.
But
exciting.
But I mean, that's all the big names and all the stuff right up at the top of it. There was one other person that everybody was talking about, a competitor in WRC3.
Yes, hero of the week. Mm. And that's Louise Cook, who you may have seen got to the Rally Germany quite late on last time, because I saw this on Twitter. She managed to get last-minute sponsorship, and then they drove and slept in the car and all this sort of stuff to save money. But she competed in Germany. It was Germany and Finland are the last two races. Mm. Maybe not in that order, but they're the last two races. But at the last minute, she got funding for Turkey. So she drove for 37 hours, or they drove for 37 hours through 9 countries to get there. And in the end, because they just got the funding, and in the end, she ended up with, she got 2 points in WRC3, which is amazing, and moves her up to 8th. This really, for me, is one of the stories of the WRC season, because she has pushed so hard, her and the team have pushed so hard to get money to compete. And she's obviously capable of driving as well. So this isn't like a vanity project or anything, you know.
No.
So you know, do keep an eye out. There's a link to her website here. Do keep an eye out. There's ways you can donate and stuff like that if you are so inclined. I hope she can continue to get sponsorship and attend these races, because just on grit alone, she deserves it.
Totally. So yeah, if you're not going to the show notes, then it's cutecookie.co.uk, and on there is her rally turkey roundup, which tells the whole story.
And it was a hell of a story, not just the getting there. Was a hell of a story.
Exactly. So yeah, absolutely fantastic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Flipping to the other end of motorsport, from professionals desperately trying to claw their next sponsorship deal to the Goodwood Revival.
I'm still sad it's over.
I was busy all weekend, so I didn't
really... I managed to have the weekend free so I could watch it, and it was amazing.
Yeah, nicely done. But lunchtime read this week is a story on Autosport by Kevin Turner, asking whether or not the drop in lap times at Goodwood in recent years is a problem for historic racing. And it's quite interesting. It's a nicely balanced piece. Points out, you know, it's stuff like the Cortinas are getting 45 to 50 brake horsepower more than they did in period, for example. Yeah. But overall, does that actually matter? But on the other hand, if people don't want to update to the latest, you know, the latest alloys for their engine and all these kind of thing. Sorry, alloys and cams and all these kind of things. I didn't mean like alloy wheels. Then, you know, is it putting them off? Are their vehicles, which are more original now, less desirable than ones which aren't as original as desirable ones? Really interesting piece. It's 5 to 10 minutes of reading and well worth it. And there's some videos of Goodwood scattered in there too.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, isn't it? It's the warning shot that maybe this will make it too exclusive if we keep going down this route.
Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, does it really matter because the racing's great?
But on the other hand, at the minute, we're loving it as spectators.
Yeah.
But will we get to a point where we go, well, it's just the same three cars up front?
Yeah.
So that's the question. It's a really good article. Do go and read. And feel free to ping me or Alan and let us know your thoughts on that one, because I'm torn between the two sides of the argument.
Yeah, I'm not really sure either. I think I would slightly prefer originality personally, but I see the arguments on both sides.
Yep. Right, moving on to list of the week, and after a hiatus of some time, Friend of the show, Gavin Braithwaite-Smith, is back. And this time, with continuing a theme of motorsport, it seems, in the second half, 10 brilliant cars we can thank rallying for. And it's on motoring research. And he talks about the various
homologation.
Thank you. Homologation vehicles.
Take a run up.
Yes. God, no, I didn't have anybody's names to try and pronounce this week. So he's talking about all those. So I'm not going to run through the whole list because you need to click and have a little look yourself. But we have things as you would expect, such as the Lancia Delta Integrale. There's also the Stratos. Some more that I wasn't expecting so much, which is like the Ferrari GTO. But I then understand once he explains why. So that makes a bit of a thing. There's obviously the Lancia 037 Stradale even. God.
You're doing well tonight.
Oh, man. I am so sorry, everyone.
Mitsubishi Evo 6 Tommy Mäkinen edition, and just about any of those. Tsuru WRX SDIs,
yep.
Particularly the 22Bs. Escort Cosworth, if we're going for the newer stuff back. Loads of cool stuff from 205 T6.
Pretty much any car there we'd say yes to.
The only one I've driven is the Evo.
None of them.
I was quite chuffed to have driven the Evo, to be honest.
That's pretty cool. That is pretty cool.
Used to have a mechanic who had served his time on his apprenticeship with a historic rally team. And anytime you're standing there looking at stuff and going, how hard do you think it is? His response was always going to be, was always, well, it's not a Stratos, so it can't be that bad. Relatively speaking, that was kind of, he now, I believe, works for a company that does prototyping stuff for Jaguar.
Land Rover. Oh, right, okay, cool.
SVR and stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is why he's not still my mechanic.
Yeah, his rates may have gone up otherwise.
Yeah, no, he's properly employed now, you see. That's the difference. That's the difference, he's not self-employed. I passed an Escort Cosworth. I'll ignore you for a second. An Escort Cosworth alike the other day, and I'm sure it wasn't alike. And it looked quite good to begin with, and then you just looked, and the wheels were just awful and sat in the wrong places and stuff. Anyway, and finally, do you know what? We actually had trouble trying to pick an and finally this week.
We did, for a change. We
did. Normally, an and finally is quite easy. You identify one early-ish in the week, and then you change it three or four times as it goes along. But there wasn't very much this week. So, spotted in Toyota City... Jean-Yves Jean, who actually works for Toyota, but then also by a Japanese account and picked up by Jalopnik, is that the Toyota Century, the one below the President, the Century, which is pretty much, you know, the Toyota's second flagship, because the President's so ridiculous. It's like the next one down. But people have spotted a GRMN badged, body kitted, slammed version of the Toyota Century. And it's the most curious thing, because it looks like a resto mod to an extent, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's got these kind of modern dark grey wheels. But then it's white, and, you know, dark grey wheels and a grey body kit and red highlighty bits, and a little lip spoiler on the boot. But then the actual shape is like kiddie draws saloon car. Just this kind of, it's classic three box large saloon car. Yeah, they're saying it's just a development thing. It's just a bit of a sort of. It's not even a concept. It's a bit of playing around by the looks of it, by the engineering department. Toyota-san, of course, CEO, has been spotted with it, smiling lots, because not only was there a white one, there seems to, I don't know if it's the same one or not, be a black one as well. But it only holds GR Sport liveries, whereas the white one on Jalopnik has actually got a GRMN badge, so it's got the full thing. Mm. GR Sports like that.
I saw this earlier on Twitter, and I have contacted Toyota UK PR team and put the request in and said, we've all been very, very good over here. Pretty please, could we have this in the UK by any chance? God bless you, Governor. It's been favourited, but I've had no response more than that.
So they laughed. Yes.
Possibly.
Yes. Yes, I can imagine, though, if there was even the slightest hope, then they would be scrabbling around trying to find an excuse.
Yes, they will have made many business cases as to why it could be here already.
Yeah. Yeah, it just looks ridiculous, but in an awesome way. It's so cool, yeah. They reckon if it would cost about twice as much as an Lexus LS and would be well up, touching your Bentley territory price-wise as well, which would just be... Ridiculously.
That sounds reasonable.
So, yes. Yes, totally. So, links there in the show notes if you haven't already seen that on Twitter, but I just thought that was... I had free choice of what we went to put in there. I presented two to Andrew, and he chose that one, by the way, just in case anybody thinks that I'm being terrible and pushing stuff there. Which really brings us to the end, because that was the end, finally. So, yes... Some stuff has been changed in here. So thanks to everyone who completed the questionnaire. The questionnaire is now closed. Andrew has collated all the responses. Some of you might notice that we've paid attention to them already, and some of you might notice that we've ignored you so far. But yeah, we'll actually digest the responses, decide exactly what we're going to do about it. But there have been no huge shocks to our systems, which is a relief. So thank you so much. let's say everyone who took the time, and there were many tens of you who did that. So that's,
no, we really, really appreciate
awesome.
That.
We're far more worried that we'd only get three responses back, no matter what they say.
Yes.
Rearview is still on holiday.
Yes.
Rearview is having an extended, enjoyable hiatus. But why not go back and listen or re-listen to an older episode? Natalie McGloin is a good example of one that you might have missed. You might want to listen to again. It's episode 30. And she is, of course, the FIA's... I've now forgotten her exact title for FIA. But anyway, she is a racing driver. She's a very good racing driver. She's very much worth listening to because she's quite awesome. Mm-hmm. Also had my current mechanic do some work on her car as well, which is really good. Special edition, however, on Friday to make up for the... As if we've been giving you a distinct lack of content lately, there will be a special edition out on Friday, provided we can record it on Thursday.
Yes. All things being equal, dear... technology gods, do not mess with us.
Yeah, not having to rely on telephones. I'll be at home, not in the hotel for that one. And that basically brings us to the end this week. So don't forget, between now and next week, you can give us any feedback. Share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Oh, thanks for all the feedback on Instagram recently, by the way. It's been quite good. Don't forget Patreon. If you go to motoringpodcast.com or motoringpodcast.com/support, and you can leave reviews, ratings, or whatever via Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or basically whichever podcast platform you choose to use. I still haven't had a response back from Spotify, by the way, so at some point I will actually get around to checking if something has magically happened. In the meantime, Andrew, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Best way to get in touch with me would be via Twitter. If you search for Crack Windscreen, you should see me there. And I am posting to Instagram as well. So if Instagram is your thing, then you will see some stuff going up on there as well. And Alan, if people want to get in touch with you and ask if you were ill, I'm wondering why you weren't the person leading all the Toyota articles this week. What's the best way for them to do that?
Totally not ill, just very, very busy. Twitter at AJP Bradley, BRADLEY. We will both be back next week. I'm trying to work out where I am next week. I'm at home. Awesome. Next week. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.